I'm interviewing actor, director and playwright Stephen Adley Gurgis in the Hell's Kitchen district of New York in a diner called Route 66. Hello, Stephen.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm fine. Stephen is also having brunch at the moment as he has a very busy schedule ahead of him. He has a screenplay to write from start to finish in the next 7 days. Stephen, first of all, I'd like to talk to you a little bit about your career. You're best known in Britain for Jesus Hot the A-Train, which was a major success. I think you got nominated for Best New Play in the Oliviers, if I remember correctly. That wasn't your first play, though. Do you want to talk about your career? First of all, how did you become a playwright?
I became a playwright kind of by accident. I was an actor, and I was a member of our theater company. It's called The Labyrinth, and which is basically a group of actors who used to meet to sort of just work out. We weren't a producing company, and after a time together we decided to start producing theater, and we decided to become sort of multidisciplinary and do everything ourselves, so that you would have actors writing, actors directing, actors producing, tearing tickets, building sets, mainly because we were the only people we knew, you know. So at a suggestion of a friend, I wrote a short little something, and it played, I think, 6 performances, and, you know, people laughed when it was supposed to be funny, and we got quiet when it was serious, and seemed to get a good reception, and so my friends kind of just continued to pressure me to keep writing stuff, and I did. So, and then eventually, you know, I don't know. Eventually I'm sitting here with you.
That's really good. And I think your first full-length play was In Arabia We'd All Be Kings, which was shown at Hampstead earlier this year. I know that you must have been very pleased that Tom Hardy, who played Skank, got the Best Newcomer Award in the Evening Standards. Did you see the London production?
I did see the London production. I was there with them for a while, and I thought they did a great job. You know, there was a tremendous amount of energy and commitment to wanting to like get it right. You know, which is, and Tom's just a great guy. I feel I made a lifelong friend. He's a good guy. He was just here a couple weeks ago, and we were hanging out, and yeah, it was great. That was the first sort of full length. I had written like shorter things and little workshopping things, but that was sort of the first full length play. And that that came about from living around here during the Giuliani administration, and everything was just changing overnight, and bars that were open one day were shuttered the next, and you know, big signs, you know, coming soon, you know, Toys R Us, you know, stuff like that, and a lot of dispossessed people, or people that were basically pushed further west or further north, and I guess I was sort of living among them at the time. I was living in a building that was for like the formerly homeless, HIV and AIDS people, mentally ill, and then a small amount of apartments set aside, elderly, and then a small side of apartments for artists. So I was in the mix, you know. I mean, that was where I lived at night, and during the day I was, you know, in prisons and hospitals doing, you know, arts education, and in between I was, you know, around here and theater, so it was sort of, I don't know where I was at, and yeah, I just wrote it, and I guess it turned out all right.
It certainly turned out all right. It's also been noticeable that you've really made that your milieu, the downtrodden underclasses of New York, both in all in that play, also in Jesus, and I think the most recent play, Our Lady of 121st Street, was also similar themes.
Yeah, a little different. I mean, the characters in Our Lady like have jobs, by and large, so they're moving up, you know, in the social strata, but yeah, I guess that there has been a recurrent. I mean, I guess as a playwright, you can't be a playwright unless you're somewhat in love with language, you know, and I love especially the language of the street and slang and the derivation of slang and the immediacy of expression that people, when they don't have time to waste, you know, they you know, in the street when there's a problem, you know, people get right to the point. I don't know, I'm attracted by that. The new play I'm writing actually, you know, is not in the street. You know, it has some streetish characters. What do they say? You can't, it's in me, and it's just part of, I think, of who I am, how I grew up. And so, I guess I have an affinity towards that and to people.
One thing that's proved very interesting is how something like that, that is so prototypically New York, has appealed to Londoners and in Edinburgh and has been a major success.
Yeah.
I was reminded of Jesus Hot the A-Train earlier in the week because I saw a new play by Pulitzer Prize winner Nilo Cruz called Anna in the Tropics, and the cast seemed very familiar to me. A lot of Labyrinth people, John Ortiz and David Zayas, who were two of the stars of Jesus, both in New York and London, played in it. Would you like to talk a little bit about where Jesus came from? It must have been partly from your work and partly from the people you were meeting.
I was in prisons a lot, so certainly as a backdrop, you know, I was an influence in. You never get used to the sound of those doors closing behind you, even if you know you're going to leave, you know. It's kind of shakes you. And then I think I was dealing with, you know, I grew up Catholic, and then I lost my, I stopped going to church, you know. But then I reached a certain age where I became... I found it necessary to have some sort of spiritual connection, and grappling with that and the responsibilities of trying to live in a spiritual manner. I think those things influenced the writing of the play, and then also having had a friend when I was younger who left and joined a cult, and my feelings about that at the time. You know, I became very involved in trying to rescue him. And, you know, I never succeeded in rescuing him. And I think it had more to do with not wanting to let go of my childhood, you know, and him being a powerful connection to my childhood and him not being there, you know, sort of meant like, well, I guess I have to grow up now. And I think that the character of Angel Cruz in Jesus Hop the A-Chain is a similar thing. I mean, he's in a much more high-pressure situation because he's actually in prison, you know, and on trial for murder. But it's really a play, I think, for his journey is really to grow up, to accept responsibility, to accept the fact you're not 15, you're 30, you're a man, you know, and so that's, I don't know, is that... help. I mean, all those things were kind of churning inside of me when it was written, and every step of the way. The great thing about going to London was it enabled me to keep working on the play. You know, I did rewrites for the Donmar, I did rewrites for the Arts, and now I think the play is going to be coming to Broadway next fall or winter, and so I'll do rewrites for that too.
Are you going to try and keep the same cast for Broadway?
Same cast. Everybody, same director, same writer, same actors, same designers. Yes.
Congratulations. That sounds brilliant.
Yeah, well, let's hope. You know, I'm looking for some wood to knock on. You hear the knocking? But yeah, it's supposedly set. And it'll be the Labyrinth production on Broadway.
I think it's very interesting that, as I said, Nilo Cruz is on Broadway now, who is the first Hispanic winner of the Pulitzer Prize. And there's a new play on Broadway by a Hispanic writer. And the Latino thing seems to be coming, and maybe you were in at the start of that, you and obviously the Labyrinth group.
Well, I mean, I think it's a fortunate marriage that you have Nilo, who's a really talented, brilliant playwright, and he's written a lot of plays that are great. This one just happened to win the Pulitzer, you know. And then in New York, having a company that's largely Latino, full of very talented actors. And then having a guy like Jimmy Smits, who's, you know, a big kind of star in America, and, you know, says, hey, I want to do a play. It's a really good union. And I think that that union has energized everyone. Because I'm around them all the time. You know, it's great for the lab members. There's also Daphne Ruben Vega and Vanessa Aspiaga are members. So it's great for us. We have this sort of Broadway experience. And for them to participate as Latinos in a Latino play on Broadway is amazing. For Nilo to have access to the caliber of actors who already have the relationships because they've already been together for 10 years. And then for Jimmy to bring everything he brings, but also I think part of his experience is to become reinvigorated by the energy of John and Dave and those guys. So it's a great thing.
You've talked already a bit about Labyrinth, but I think it's a very, very close-knit community, and we've discussed it before. And I just think it would be interesting for people to hear about how Labyrinth works, how it all ticks, how you all fit together.
Yeah. Well, it's constantly evolving, but, you know, it started back in 92 or 93, and it started as a Latino company. And it started, they were doing a play, Death and the Maiden, on Broadway.
The Errol Dorfman play.
Errol Dorfman play. And they cast the play, you know, it was a South American, a Chilean play, right? And they cast the play without a single Latino actor. And when the producers were asked, well, how come there's no Latino actors in this? They said, well, we couldn't find any. So John Ortiz and Paul Calderon, Gary Perez started the Labyrinth, in the hopes that the producers of New York would be able to find some Latinos. Anyway, that's how it started. And like I said, we started as a gym for actors. And so bonds were built. We've grown up together. You know, most of us were in our, you know, early 20s, you know, when we first met. And now, you know, it's, a dozen years later, you know, it's like we've been in love with each other and broken up with each other. We've had kids together. You know, it's ripening fruit. But the thing I think that keeps us together and perhaps makes us special is that there's not a lot of egos, and the love amongst each ourselves is really pretty strong and true. And that the people themselves is made up, you know, there's people like Phil Hoffman, who's like a movie star.
That's Philip Seymour Hoffman, the movie star.
Hoffman, right. Sam Rockwell, guys like that. And then there's people in the company that don't even make their living as an actor. You know, teachers, firemen. David Zayas was a cop, you know, when he first joined the company. And the common denominator, I think, is heart. It sounds corny to say, but a great heart, you know, and a collective heart, and individuals with strong hearts, and strong desire to try to do good work, and support each other, and you know, like I said, I wouldn't be talking to you, except that I became a writer because I was in the company, and I became a writer because I was encouraged to write. You know, Phil became a director. He was encouraged to direct. You know, John Rubin, who's produced my last three plays, never produced anything. You know, never. You know, and so, you know, sometimes maybe it's foolish, but we have a lot of faith in each other, and things get done as a result of it. And I think that. I don't know. That's sort of to what I would attribute, you know, whatever people are saying us about us now. You know, I just did this reading down the public of my new play.
What's the title of your new play?
It's called, The Last Days of Judas Iscariot. It's about very small, minor themes. But again, I had like 16 or 17 actors. And again, it was actors like, you know, changing, you know, travel plans, you know, leaving, you know, one guy was in a movie in London and like left early just to do the reading. You know, other people are changing their flights, you know, taking like 2 days off for, you know, to do a reading. And that's the spirit that makes us successful. People, we want to be working together, and people do what they have to do to make that happen. So if I have something, you know, I got 17 actors that are changing their schedules around and being like, hey, I'm here. Or to read two lines, you know? But in the earliest stages of development, you know, it's like those two lines can end up being the centerpiece of the play. So we're very fortunate. I guess eventually maybe we'll all get fat or bitter or whatever, but right now we're very fortunate.
But that give and take does seem to work, because we met in the autumn in London when you flew over for a couple of days to help out Brett Leonard with his play, which was having a reading at RADA.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I brought Brett into the company, or I brought him around until he got in, and now our next production is one of Brett's plays, a play called Guinea Pig Solo that he wrote, and it's going to be our first collaboration with the public. So what I think what happens is that people of like-minded energy, eventually, the Phil and John are really great at finding the like-minded people, you know. And we'll, you know, everyone's brought some around and have come in, but they find us, you know. We find them, and they find us, and yeah, and that's what it's, you know. Brett's a great writer, so why wouldn't I want to do whatever I could, you know?
I think that probably covers a lot of the work you've done in theatre. I think it's also interesting that, as well as being a great playwright, you're also doing incredible amounts of other work as well. Do you want to talk a little bit, perhaps, about your film work?
Sure. Well, as an actor, I've been... I had a busy summer. I did a new film by Todd Solondz. It's called Palindromes. I think it's going to be really amazing. I mean, that guy's just out of his mind. And the script is really funny, but yet it's very serious. Yeah, I had a nice role in that, and it was kind of scary and hard work, but it was great. And then I did Brett Leonard. He just directed his first feature from his own script and I acted with a guy named Michael Pitt, who's an American actor who's kind of, I don't know, some people say he's like the next Leonardo or whatever. He's a great guy, but he's like a real good-looking young guy, and he's always in the magazines now and stuff like that. And again, that was another really difficult and scary project, but it was a lot of fun. And now I guess I'm just like auditioning for a lot of stuff. I mean, I want to work as an actor till I die, you know.
Is that on stage as well, or particularly on film?
Yeah, I mean, I acted in plays all through my 20s, but it was always, you know, like fringe theaters, you know, small plays, small things and that. If I go too long without acting, I get really unhappy. And that's just something I've discovered. Every once in a while, I'll be like, wow, I'm really, really, really extraly, specially depressed. And then I'll be like, wow, I haven't acted in 6 months or 4 months, or I haven't even done a reading, and then I do something and I feel better. I don't know, it's something, it's, I don't know. So yeah, so doing that stuff is great, and then writing, there's a couple of different film things that I might be writing, and I am writing my first screenplay is an original screenplay for the Sundance Screenwriters Lab, which actually starts very shortly. It's like the 5 or 6 days before the festival. So I'll be there and I for that, and then go to the festival and watch some movies.
And just for clarification here, you haven't started writing it, and it's due to be released in a week's time?
Yeah, well, honestly, it's... What's today, Tuesday? Honestly, it's supposed to be in on Friday, But I figure I could talk them into like a few days, so I just get 7 days. And yeah, you know, time management's not my great strength. You know, I'm hoping to mature into a better manager of time. But hey, I got 7 days. I've never written a script before. There's nothing to lose. You know, sometimes there's, you know, luck and beauty in like inspiration and, you know, and off the cuff. And so we'll see, you know. And I'm, you know, like I said, I'm talking to you. I got a guitar class afterwards, and then I'm probably not going to talk to anyone until next Tuesday, you know. And that's fine. The story is somewhat in my head, you know. I just write down a little outline and just give it a shot, you know. I mean, I don't know. I learned in a been through a lot of stuff in the last 8 months to a year, and one thing I think I'm starting to learn is that the work is really important, and to do good work is very important. But you know, to have a life is also important. And not that I don't take everything I do seriously, because I do, but there's all this extra, you know, beating myself up. It's just like, you know, if the script isn't done, if it sucks, you know, they're going to beat me up for me. You know, I don't need to start doing it now before I've actually started writing. So we'll see what happens, Mr. Fisher.
You said that you haven't written the scripts before, but I think you've worked in television.
Television, yeah, but that's different. Different 1 hour drama and film, it's different. But yeah, I did. I worked in on NYPD Blue and Sopranos. I did an episode of that, and a show called, not CSI, it was a show called Big Apple. That was David Milch, the guy who created NYPD Blue, and then a show called UC Undercover. That was on NBC last year. So yeah, and it's funny because I list these credits, and it sounds to me like, well, he must know what he's doing. But really, it's like I can't. You would think that I'm experienced from saying those credits, and I did do them, you know. But you know, I might be embarking on another television thing, and I feel like I don't remember anything about how to do it, you know. So I don't know, but it's good. TV is good once in a while, because you get your health benefits, you know, and send a little money to mom and dad and stuff like that.
I imagine that having the opportunity to have a show produced on Broadway may not be too bad for the health benefits and mom and dad as well.
Well, you'd be surprised. I mean, I haven't had the experience yet, but yeah. I mean, I guess if it was like a runaway hit, you know, with touring, you can make money. But they say in theater, it's like you can, what's that expression? They say, you can make a killing, but you can't make a living. In fact, I heard a story just recently about an award-winning playwright who, you know, hasn't made a killing, you know, after the producers got through negotiating his contract. You know, he hasn't made a killing, you know, on his show. But yeah, no, it's better than, you know, McDonald's, or, you know, you get more than that. But I think that the theater is for the love, you know, and also maybe some people think of it as prestigious, you know. So if you're like, you're a playwright, they're like, oh, he's a playwright. As opposed to if you're a television writer, you know, you can be a millionaire, multimillionaire. No one knows who the hell you are, you know. And they're like, ah, who's that schmuck? So I don't know. It's a trade-off. I think the people I admire find a way to find quality work to do in all different arenas, and so that they can make enough money to live and do stuff for love, do stuff for some money, and try to just do good work. And I see it's possible. I see, you know, I'm coming across people every day that, you know, who are doing that. So, and I'm not married yet, so I don't need to make a lot of money. But If I do get married and have kids, you probably won't be interviewing me. I'll be one of the TV guys. Like, whatever happened to Stephen Adley Girgis? It's such a promising beginning, and then he went like Clifford Odets to Hollywood, and now he's 300 pounds and, you know, has three mortgages.
So which elements of your work do you enjoy most, or do you like, presumably you must like the variety?
I like acting the most.
Stage acting
first. Film acting is something I'm just learning. There's a whole craft to it, but it's good. It's cool. Writing, playwriting. I really like the theater. The theater really the most. So it's like if I'm acting in a play, or writing a play, or in rehearsals for a play, or directing a play, that's where I feel most at home, and that's where I feel most in alignment with what I'm supposed to be doing. You know when you know you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, and you know you feel good, and the coffee tastes better, whatever. Cigarette is more, it burns a little harsher in the lung, And that's theater, And other stuff is good too, though. But.
So would you like the idea of managing to act on Broadway as well as, with a bit of luck, having one of your shows produced there?
Oh, sure. I mean, who wouldn't? Who wouldn't? But I was thinking about what John Patrick Shanley, who's in our company, American playwright, has said about success and the evolution of progress in one's career. And he said, he's like, the misconception is this. He says, you think when things start going well, that things are just going to get better and better and better and better and better. He's like, and then one day you realize that it was never better than in a tiny little theater with 30 fold-up chairs with just your friends in the audience. And I don't know, I think about that a lot. And it makes me appreciate what's going on. Because, I can be... it helps me appreciate. I need to remember. I need to have things like that, so that I don't. So I'm not like rushing past what's happening or just discounting what's happening. Like, so what? I'm miserable. So I don't know. This is a very good time. I'm very fortunate, and my fellows are very fortunate. And, the trick is to just, I think, try to keep going, keep moving forward, not analyze it or bathe in it but just try to keep doing the work, and see what happens, because they're going to, that's all there really is to do other than, party. And that's a short end, The shelf life on that is shorter, but there's a lot of people that work until they die, so.
Yeah. Okay, Stephen, thank you very much. Sure. That's been absolutely excellent. Yeah, I'm really grateful.
Yeah, thank you.